They've done studies, you know. 60% of the time, it works every time.
If you're good at something, never do it for free.
I'd like to be pimps from Oakland or cowboys from Arizona, but it's not Halloween.
Look, my friend, this is just where you and I differ.
Grow up, Peter Pan. Count Chocula.
If my answers frighten you, Vincent, then you should cease asking scary questions.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody
stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here. Right, well, okay, Stocks and Jocks. Right, come on, Jimmy Lawler on the board of Mass Weber here in a little bit. We have S&P futures. We were down last night, but we're up because we have, evidently now we have some progress in these talks on again, off again. Boy, I'd love to trade that news that comes out. S&P futures down 11, NASDAQ futures up 3, so very little happening. Oil is up 40 cents only, 77 bucks, so that's kind of Dullsville in the, so far in the market. I'm sure we'll get a huge update on Friday, or on Thursday, sorry. S&Ps were up 80, NASDAQ was up almost 500. Erasing the all the losses of the day before, so we're up, down, based on the news. Do we have Mr. John Lee?
No, we do not.
We do not. All right. Well, so it was a three-day weekend, kind of interesting. They had an awful lot of people. Boy, they O'Hara's loaded this morning. Yesterday they were talking about as many people between the Juneteenth and Father's Day, as many people almost as Thanksgiving. That's unreal. I mean, got some people who are people are doing some traveling. Gas prices are down a little bit, so, of course, those aren't the people going to O'Hare. I get that part. But interesting news. We have crazy stock moves again on Friday. As, you know, it's very difficult. Well, it's always difficult managing money for people.
I thought on Friday the market was closed.
It was. We had, on Thursday we were up that much. Wednesday we were down. You know, we used to have in Monday holidays. These Friday holidays are... The 4th of July holiday is going to be on a Friday, too. 4th is on a Saturday. So we are off a week from Friday. I guess the next year when it's on a Sunday, probably have it on a Monday.
Yep.
I'm not sure about that. But
well, we also were able to stop the vandal from vandalizing the Olympic or the Memorial Pool.
Yeah.
This, supposedly he is a ex- canoer, Olympic canoer, 1996 team, and he picked up a piece of the floating debris and was said vandalism.
Yeah.
That's it, Chief. People are picking up the stuff.
The stuff meaning the lining that is floating.
The lining that's breaking away.
Yep.
To keep them as souvenirs.
And Trump is complaining that it's vandalism. You know, at some point... I don't know, whatever. I don't want to go down that road here today, but at some point people are going to have to sit, look in the mirror and go, something's wrong. I don't know when it's going to happen, or maybe never. But
well, my question really is, Chief, who is going to fix it, and what is the cost going to be? Is it going to be a no-bid contract again?
Well, again, well, I just, I mean, to me, it's, I look at it and I can't even go there. The Prime Minister of England resigned today, of Britain, England. Of course, Trump's all over saying what a rotten guy he was because he lets in immigrants. And the real reason his popularity, well, the timing of his popularity dropping, was that he admitted knowing the fact that their minister, or whatever the guy was, ambassador, was an Epstein guy. He admitted knowing he had the ties to Epstein. So it seems like everybody around the world is falling from ties to Epstein except Trump.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Well, he can't get rid of it. That's his problem.
But it doesn't matter. His people don't care. The fear of the Democrats, the fear of the party of the blacks and gays is so out there that this guy can do anything, and it's really pretty scary. I mean, there is absolutely no moral fiber you can attach to the man where somebody's going to say that's enough.
That is true. His friend... one of the Magna ministers was caught red-handed cheating on his wife. Supposedly also asked at Mar-a-Lago about strip clubs and allegedly something about cocaine. And this is a mega church guy out of Oklahoma. It's okay.
It's okay. It's all right. By the way, Florida's big on strip clubs.
Yes, they are.
You know, on one side of Route 1, they can go fully naked but no contact. On the other side, you have to wear a little bit, then it's full contact.
Well, the running joke was it's ladies' night every night at the Kennedy compound.
Well, it's a very bizarre world. So the soccer, seems to be that there's a lot of games that, since they let the 48 teams in, this is what people who know a lot about soccer are telling me, that having 48 teams in there instead of 32 is made for like a lot of really unbalanced games. That some teams are way better than other teams. Is that a this year phenomenon, or does that happen all the time?
No, that is this year. Usually it's 32 teams. I will say, you know, the U.S. locked it up. But I am going to comment, Chief, that you were right. FIFA does have a rule. If you are talking to another player and you cover your mouth, you're now kicked out with a red card. The funniest, I think, was I was in Lake Geneva a week ago, and my college roommate's son, his wife's German, to show you the German mentality, they won 7-1. When they were up 3-1, the Germans still think that they could lose. When they're up 4-1, 5-1, when it got to 6-1, they figure they could win. So this weekend's game, when they won 2-1, must have caused them a heart attack.
Yeah.
The other best story that I heard is that the Scots drank Boston dry.
Yeah, I heard that too.
but
their fans are allowed here. The Iranians aren't.
Well, there were a lot of Iranians in Southern California. My question
is, I think they all had to get out. They didn't give visas to the family members.
No, these are people that are refugees.
There's a lot of people that are here from Iran.
Correct. And they live in Southern California.
Well, a lot of them live here. I mean,
they could. And I'm sure Trump...
We had one on the show for a long time, Fari.
And I'm sure the current administration is looking into all these people. Are they here legally?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting when you do the show or when you do anything... And you get a sense, maybe it's just when you get a little older, you get a sense that everything you do has nothing but consequences and seems to cause other things. I mean, we're going to put a law out there. Okay, how are you going to enforce it? Who's going to enforce it? There's always a million questions that goes with everything. So when I heard this thing about, for those who don't know what we're talking about, if you are talking to somebody in a soccer game now, World Cup game, and you cover your mouth, it's assumed that it's a racial slur because you covered your mouth. So you're going to get kicked out of that game and the next game.
And you're suspended from the next game.
Yeah. So this, to me, of course, now, with my actively nut job mind, a bunch of questions. Do they really have that many cameras on everybody's mouth and that many lip readers that are certified by lip readers anonymous, whoever the hell they are, that you really can lip read everything that everybody says all over the field when there's 20-some people out there? And
I really think that in some cases, Chief, when they're talking to the ref, you don't need a lip reader. It's no different.
I understand that. I mean, the
NFL or the NBA.
When you drop the F-bomb, it's fairly obvious that's what you're saying. Okay, but not every phrase is the F-bomb.
No, not every phrase, but they did put it.
Now we come down to what is the definition of a racial slur? If it's two teams playing and they're all black, or two teams playing and they're all white, can there be a racial slur or all Hispanic? Or is it only when two different colors are playing?
That's a good question. Don't know, but we do have Mr. Flanagan on the line.
So maybe he's an attorney. He's supposed to know all this stuff.
Oh, yeah, right, Tom.
What if... Hello, John. How are you?
Worried, Tom. Worried, Jim.
I'm just following this down because every time you do something, as brother George Copper said in Marist High School, whenever you pass a law, it implies enforcement. How are you going to do it? Who's going to do it? And none of that's changed. I was a freshman year in high school, right? All right, so what happens if you're just kind of running down the field? Are there cameras on all 20-some people's mouths, plus the sidelines, is my question. I'm going to say the answer to that is no. So if two white teams are playing and somebody lobs out, since I'm Irish, somebody lobs out, you dumb Mick, now is that a racial slur? Does that count? What is that?
probably a slur in some people's ears. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if it's a German guy, now does that get you a red card or not?
I don't think it's the cameras. I think because you have two line judges and two referees. If they catch you, then you're
thwarted. Well, they catch you if you put your hand over your mouth. But if you don't put your hand over your mouth and you lob one out there, they obviously, if the guy goes, hey, this guy called me something something, then they have to go back and look. Obviously, somebody is, right, Jen? They're gonna feel they have the ability to go back and look. And, somebody,
well, and the only way that works is if there's a camera trained on everybody's mouth all the time.
That's my point.
Yeah, they do have replay. Matt's here, so
I'm saying it's a rule that I understand why they're doing it, but it brings up a bunch of other questions that I'm sure nobody's either asked or answered, like usual, right?
Right. Well, it's too bad, you know. They eventually find enough ways to make any sport tiresome,
yep.
You know, by doing this kind of stuff. So you know, they all start to sound the same and look the same.
So we're looking for racial slurs now. Now, the assumption there is all people that are black like each other, all people that are Hispanic, no matter what country you're from, like each other, and all white people like each other. Now, does anybody really think that that's the truth?
No, of course. I mean, it isn't the truth, but this is the, you know, kind of the model that's being used, that all these people in this group obviously behave the same way, and they have the same prejudices and bigotries, so... they have to be treated as a group when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Well, I saw Ecuador playing, was it Ivory Coast or somebody?
No, that Ivory Coast played Germany.
What's the first game? The first game of the whole mess was Ecuador played somebody and they lost 1-0, and all they did was cheap shot everybody the whole time. It was either Ghana or Ivory Coast, one of the two. It was another African team. And they looked to me like they liked each other at all. Now, does that mean there can't be a racial slur? We don't have to worry about the lip readers. They get the night off or what? These are just questions that pop into my head, John. What can I say? So the Germans are playing the Brits. We were assuming love there. I wouldn't. I'm just saying. But the people from Mount Greenwood that were all Irish, pretty much, used to go down to play all the people in Marquette Park at basketball. They were all Lithuanian. There wasn't a whole lot of love lost there. Just saying, you know,
there was no love lost.
There was no love there.
If you start, you know, measuring all these, you know, sporting events with these tripwires, you know, about extra, you know, athletic behavior, stuff that, you know, it shouldn't form part of the sport, but of course it does. You know, this is one of the, I think, the attractions maybe of soccer too, is it's got all sorts of, you know, rivalries, long-standing hatreds, and, you know, national feeling, and, you know, bruised feelings going way back. This is, you know, this is kind of what makes, you know, people go to the games in a way.
Well, I guess. I mean, I'm not a huge fan, although I am a huge fan of the fact that one ball and 20 people can play, or 21 or whatever, 22. Same thing, to me, it's like 16-inch softball. One ball, one bat, and a whole lot of people get to play. So, I mean, I love the sport for that regard, that you don't need, you know, $1,000 or $2,000 worth of hockey equipment to go play or something, you know, which puts it out of the budget of 99% of the world, right? So, I mean, in that sense, I like it. But the way this is done, I watched the U.S. game just because my friends like Mr. Lawler, and they give me a bunch of crap. I watched the whole second half, and it is exactly what I can't stand about the game. Every play, every 2 seconds, it seemed like somebody's giving somebody a cheap shot. The guy goes down like he's dead. The referee gets involved in this huge lip brawl with both teams. The clock is running, but then again, he must have turned the client just as extra time instead of just stopping the clock until they start playing again. Now, you know, that's the way they do it, but okay, it's fine. You can poop in the street, too, but that's the way you do it, but it's not so good either. I mean, so you don't even know how much time's left. So then they start playing the entire second half and part of the first half. I never saw a shot anywhere near on goal in that game. All they did was kind of play keep away, and as soon as somebody got hit, down he'd go like he was dead, and as soon as the argument was over, he gets up and starts running again. I mean, what am I missing? I mean, that's... That just totally, is that just, and I know the sport is better than that, yet that's all I saw for 45 minutes. I mean, am I right, Jimmy, or what? I mean, I know you love the game, and
it's something I love, but you brought up like 68 softball. You also have to realize that if I go to Ghana and I mention 16-inch softball, people are going to look like I'm a hole in the head.
I know that.
You mentioned soccer. Most of the world knows what it is.
I understand that. But I'm saying
it is a problem that people act. They go down and they act. The idea that the ref keeps the actual time on the field, unfortunately, has always been part of it. And it's injury time that they tack on, but you know, yeah, it could go, but it runs, at least it runs faster than football. I mean, yeah. The 2 minute drill in football lasts almost 45 minutes on a real clock.
I understand it, but when you out of bounds in football, they stop the clock. They don't keep it running and keep it a mystery of how long that took. What's the point?
That I don't know, but it's always been that the referee keeps the actual time. So he stops the clock for injury, and he then, after the 45th minute and the 90th minute, if there is any injury time, it is added on.
But it's not injury time anymore. It's argument time.
You call it what you want, but that's how it is.
How do you get anybody to be these referees? Out of the hour and a half, actually make that almost 2 hours with the extra time. The guy is being bitched at. What? It's worse than anybody in football or baseball.
Oh yeah, I mean you can get red carded and thrown out, but it's rare.
What was the game though yesterday? That how many red cards were in it?
There was one on the Belgian Iran game, but that was a breakaway. The Iranian player had a clear path to the ball, to the goal, was onside, and the Belgian player came in and took him out from behind.
Well, one guy got a nasty broken leg and everything yesterday.
That could have happened.
Not in that play, with some other, and they carted the poor guy off.
It can. If you land wrong, yeah, you could do that. It's very capable. Concussions are, obviously, when they go up for the ball. The biggest issue that they're having is this hydration break, because they normally don't have these.
Why are allegedly intelligent men like you, why aren't we just calling it a commercial break when that's what it is?
Because normally they don't have it. They run it for 45 minutes.
What is it? It's a commercial break.
It is a commercial break, but FIFA doesn't want to know it as a commercial break, so they're calling it a hydration break. Even though most of these guys are playing indoors now in the hot states, so they don't really need it. I mean, honestly, some of the African teams, the South American teams, they could play in this weather. They play in this weather all the time anyway.
Well, they should have used it last time when they were in Saudi Arabia, for God's sake.
Well, they were playing at night.
Yeah. But even so,
in Qatar.
Well, I mean, does anybody think that the college football that's put in the 2 minute warning, that that's just a 2 minute commercial break? I mean, they don't need a warning. There's a clock on the field, up on the scoreboard.
Well, that's a good thing. But football was more American sports are more designed for American TV, so commercial breaks are kind of built in.
Evidently, Telemundo doesn't cut away. My nephews are telling me that.
Probably not.
And the other, somebody else came back a couple of seconds late, and FIFA was all over. What are we? I mean, I don't know. We're qualified to talk on it. Should my nephew? He's been a researcher of this FIFA fraud and corruption for years. I don't know why he got on this subject. Because all these guys are flying around in Lears, jets, from place to place, and if they come to town, the deal they want with the city is. City pays all the expenses, all the skyboxes, all the food, all the booze. The whole, is that true?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the IOC. It's just as corrupt as they do.
I think they might be worse than the... big news here. Alan Greenspan, dead at age 100.
100?
Yeah. I didn't think he was that old. Former chairman of the Fed dies at age 100. Well, he's got a history to him, doesn't he?
100 years old.
I didn't think he was that old. Well, that is a headline. A lot of people going down in 2026. It's not the best year so far.
Well, you can't argue with a guy being 100 going down.
Except if you're the 100, you want 101.
He followed Volcker, or did he come?
No, it was somebody. It was somebody in the middle, I think. What'd you check there, Jimmy? Somebody's in the middle.
Yeah,
there were a couple people in the middle there, I think. Told Volcker. You know what? I'm not sure. Jimmy, you mind checking that?
I'll take a look.
He was there a while.
It was Reagan, wasn't it? I mean, it was.
Well, I don't know.
84 or something.
Is he a Reagan appointee?
I thought he was a Bush.
You know, he might have been, because Volcker was still here when I started. And how long did Volcker last? Well, I don't even know this history. I should know. I was there. Crazy stuff. So, Johnny, did you have a nice 3-day weekend?
Yeah, although Friday was kind of made out of, I don't really celebrate Juneteenth, but I don't get, what passes for celebrations these days are more like just another mass shooting.
See, oh, no, it's a, yeah, you know.
So the thing on 95th Street was awful.
Yep. When are we going to do something?
It was Volcker.
Volcker and then Greenspan?
Yeah.
Wow, Greenspan was there, what, 2 terms? He was there 12 years?
Volcker was there from 79 to 87.
He was there most of my early tenure, that's for sure. And then Greenspan came right after.
Mm-hmm.
And he was there, was he 12 years or was he like a term and a half?
I think he was...
It's 2006, so that was Bush 1. Bush 2, I'm sorry.
That's where he made it to?
Yeah, and that was Bernanke, I think. That
yeah,
was,
then Bernanke.
Well, that's 3 terms. That's 18 yeah. years.
87, it's only yeah. 20 years.
Well, you can, the terms are 6 years, right?
Yeah.
Because Powell was re up during Trump's first term. Right? So he was right. 12 years. But sometimes when a guy leaves early, you pick up, I'm not so sure that's for the chairman, but for the board members, they're supposed to have an X number of years, but they all end up filling in for somebody who leaves early, and then you get a little extra years, and it's kind of a mess. But anyway, so John, what do you make of what's going on with the, I actually think that they're going to come to some kind of a conclusion here in these talks, if Israel doesn't continue to screw it up. And I think, so the Israeli foreign minister came on yesterday and said, even though I had a debate with a couple of Trumpers yesterday, that Israel wants no, is not going after Christians in Lebanon. Guess what? Their defense minister came out and said they have absolutely no intention of giving any of the land back in southern Lebanon. And southern Lebanon was mostly Christian, right?
Yes, yeah. It is.
You can always.
Well, that's going to be the fly in the ointment to all of this. You know,
yeah. So if the war in Lebanon and Gaza ends, does that mean Netanyahu gets voted out and goes to jail?
Good possibility.
Simultaneously.
Yeah, and is on the way out, he gets cuffed or what?
Well, Trump said he's kept him out of jail pretty much. I think maybe Trump's losing interest in continuing to do that. So.
Well,
Trump keeps also saying that he tells Netanyahu what to do. Boy, that really works.
Yeah, that works.
Say we have a new prime minister in about 3 months in Britain. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how come, as I mentioned earlier, of course, Trump and the Trumpers tell me all about it. It's all about immigration. And today on the radio, I hear that his popularity started to drop when he said he knew. Who was the guy who got thrown out for being the Epstein guy? Was he the ambassador? Who was he? The minister or something? Something?
Peter Mandelson.
Yeah. What was he?
He was a. Starmer had made him ambassador to the U.S. and he had been the finance minister.
Yeah, he was something. Before commerce that. Or whatever. Yeah, whatever they call it.
But yeah, the Epstein connections were known then too.
Well, that's what Starmer was. He said, "I knew he had the connections," and that's what has plummeted. Started his plummet down. Everybody seems to be tired with this brush except our guys.
Well, it's striking to me how similar things are with the Labour Party in the UK and the Democratic Party in this country. They're all in kind of the same mess. They have a very shallow talent pool, and they've all gone kind of off the deep end with their, you know, loony policies. So, you know, by Starmer stepping down, and, you know, Andy Burnham probably going to be the one that replaces him, it's like Kamala Harris following Joe Biden or something. This isn't going to be any fundamental change. I don't think Burnham has any more, you know, grassroots appeal in the UK than Starmer did. He might be a little more likable, but politically he isn't any different. So, plus it's going to be like, you know, we have to put up with Starmer for the next 3 months. He's not. This is one of these resignations that is just an announcement of when you're actually going to step down. And people would like you to have stepped down 6 months ago. Now you're prolonging it another 3 months, so that doesn't help the situation either. But I think they're just in as bad a shape as the Democrats here when it comes to, you know, having lost their working class appeal a long time ago, just as the Democrats here did, and embracing the celebrity class and the globalist class. And now they've got, you know, a mess with the rape gang investigation, and, you know, you name it, the labor's got, you know, all the fingerprints for. So,
well, meanwhile, the other guys that just keep sucking money into their pocket and putting their kids in charge of stuff and cozying up to big business and doing all that stuff, they're all okay.
I'm just saying.
Why can't we find somebody in the middle? Why do we either have to be a current view? Why do we either have to be a MAGA or a current Democrat? Why can't we get choice number three, which I think most people would much rather have?
Well, that always happens very unwillingly, Tom, when it happens. You know, Trump, you know, did not have, I would say, widespread Republican support at all when he announced his candidacy for president. And he's, you know, outlasted a lot of his Republican critics, and they've grudgingly gone to his side, but not all of them, certainly. And they're just waiting for him to go so they can go back to business as usual. I mean,
which is what? I don't even know what that is anymore. Either side.
It's so distasteful now. Nobody even wants to say what it is. But behind the scenes, I think they're working to get back to it. It's the Bush, you know, family dynasty. It's, you know, the Thune and other people who have never trucked with Trump at all, and the McConnell wing. McConnell's. Yeah, I mean, has anybody heard anything about Mitch McConnell's health?
He's not dead. Or we didn't know that.
I don't know. Maybe he is.
Well,
but I mean, it's that wing of the party that refused to cede any, you know, ground to Trump and worked actively against him many times.
Well, nobody wants any part of the larceny. Nobody wants that.
The larcenists, too. I mean,
no, not to this effect. Nobody. There's a matter of degree here. There's a matter of degree. I mean, on Thursday, the last day we traded, before the weekend, a guy comes out and he starts talking about,
Intel.
It was Intel. And how they're going to cut this deal. When's the last time you even dreamed of a president announcing essentially a deal between two companies that he probably bought the day before? And what, just because it happens every day, people are becoming immune to it. To me, that's I would never, just as everybody thinks I'm just, you know, so anti-Trump, I could never vote for Hillary, because the story was, and I think it was accurate, that she had trades in her account that weren't hers. How could I, if I were not going to vote for her for that, how could I ever like this guy when every day the guy's stealing? I mean, I just can't do it. It's just not me, John. It's a deal breaker for me. It just is.
Well, he won the Colombian election. His guy won.
Yeah.
So does that make him president of Colombia too?
Well, there's all kinds of larceny in this world, but to put up with it. And, oh, that's okay. Why would anybody make an excuse for the man? I mean, it's this whole deal that they arrested the guy picking up one of the floating pieces of the reflecting pool was supposed to be the liner was floating on the top, and some guy picked it up and said, "What the hell is this?" And they're accusing him of vandalism. And Trump all weekend was talking about it's vandalism that caused the thing to screw up. The people that I know that somehow still respect this guy, they're better than that, John. They're better than that. Why would anybody believe that? or he does it, or he screws up so often that it's okay. I mean, I guess if you come home late 50 nights in a row, it's okay in your house, but it wasn't in mine, you know. I mean, I can't. But the thing is, the stuff that's going on in business, picking the winners, and I say this from what I do for a living, which is manage money for people, it is very difficult to value stocks all the time, okay? I mean, it's really a tough job, and it's why I love it, because it's tough. But when you start talking about the president picking winners, and the winners that he picks having ratios of like PE and revenue per share and stuff, wildly, incredibly bigger than anything you've ever seen, to where you say, wait a minute, that thing can't be a buy. And all of a sudden, like the next day, it doubles or something. I mean, I think there's going to be some hurt here along the line on this one. I hope not, and I'm doing my best to make sure it doesn't happen to any of my clients. But this is insane, John. And how do people say it's not? Tell me. I'd really like to know.
Where are you going to start? You know?
And where are you going to start? I mean, I'm really reluctant to sell any covered calls in stocks that I think are too expensive and people happen to have it and they need some kind of protection, especially if you're paying for some puts. I don't want to do it, because all of a sudden one day, you know, President Big Bazoo is going to come out and say, my kid's got a deal with this company, it's going to the moon. Well, that's out of all the variables that I've had in the business since I started, and believe me, governments were never straight. They bailed out long-term capital and buried a bunch of people on the trading floor. I mean, you know they've never straight. But this is some whole new, I don't know if regular people don't understand the larceny, or they don't care, or if he's your guy. My only other alternative is the party of the blacks and gays or something. I mean, maybe that's it. I don't know. I think that's part of it. The Democrats right now, in a lot of people's minds, are the parts of, or they're the illegal immigrant party, the gay party, and the black party. Am I right? In a lot of people's mind. I'm not saying yours.
Well, that just kind of scratches the surface.
Okay, well, guess what? Trump's grandfather got here because he got booted out of Germany. Why did we ever let that asshole in? Just asking.
No, he didn't get booted out of Germany.
Yes, he did.
Germany wouldn't take him back.
Well, he left originally because he wouldn't join the army. He was there for a while, but they booted him. He was living there when they told him to leave. It wasn't like they stopped him at the border. What I understand.
Well, supposedly he, after running a brothel, going up the Yukon, hotel, brothel, he wanted to go back to Germany and wrote a letter to the German government, and the German government said he was of low moral standards because he would not go.
I thought he was physically back there and they booted him, but I could be wrong.
No, he wasn't, but he wanted to go back. He left because of the draft. And because of his low moral standards,
see, the grandfather was a draft dodger. That's stunning. What an apple and fall try far. Anyway, so John, if we get out of this mess in the Middle East, I'll be very happy. And if somehow it all settles all back down, and you know, and Israel stops doing what they're doing, and somehow Trump pulls this all off, I'll say, good job. Well, of course, you can only give so much credit to the guy who put out the fire if he started the fire, but that's another story. I mean, I don't know where. Does anybody know who's even running Iran? I mean, is it the kid, or was he all messed up, or is it Revolutionary
Guard? It's the Revolutionary Guard. I seriously think the last Ayatollah, before Khomeini, was probably the last one that actually ran anything. But I think the Ayatollah since then has been a figurehead.
Well, John, what do you think? The dude supposedly was injured. And he never went through to the divinity school, so he doesn't have the chops the old man did, whatever those are. You think they're better or worse off?
Well, I think they're better off. You know, we're talking long term here. I mean, that they were, you know, boasting about being a pariah state for the last four decades. So I think if you take that kind of, you know, cachet away from them, there's some hope for the people there. It's just like with China. I feel very badly for the people there.
Oh God, yeah.
Who have to tolerate this, because you know neither of them are really backward countries, and Iran is much closer, you know, to the U.S. and its, you know, skill level and its respect for education and lots of things compared to the Chinese. But they've got, you know, a blankety blank government and have, you know, where they're punishing people for the least infractions of, you know, with this Islamic mania. So, you know, that's not good. But, you know,
I probably know, let's say 8 to 10 people from Iran. Every one of them very educated, very, you know, it's a very small sample. And those are also the people who are able to leave and go to school here. But it's not like, and not one of them likes the regime. But how do you, you know, it was easier when you could grab a gun from your farm and you were equal to the soldier, like the Brits, right? And now you don't have anything and they got a tank, you got a problem. And revolutions are pretty tough these days.
I mean, I've worked with people from Iran in the past. I mean, I had Iranian students when I was teaching at different adjunct positions over the years. You know, I had, you know, colleagues, you know, academic colleagues, and I have, you know, enormous respect for them, and they have backgrounds and world outlooks and value systems that I couldn't see any difference between theirs and mine. So, you know, my heart bled for people like that who had to put up with what they had to, and I was glad they were able to get out and get away from it. So,
Jim, what do you suppose world history would be different if the CIA didn't, what was the guy's name before the Shah, didn't bump him out?
Mossadegh.
Yeah, I mean, if we wouldn't have bumped that, I mean, the CIA, looking back over the last however many years, are they some of the biggest knaves that ever walked, or what?
Some of the worst knaves.
I'm saying, I mean, knaves, not names, knaves.
Knaves, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what if they just would let those people alone? What do you suppose the world would look like different?
No, there's a lot of what ifs. You know, that's one of the big ones, definitely. But, you know, it's early in the career of the CIA when they were, you know, I think just testing their, you know, muscle and seeing how much blowback or scrutiny they would get. And they realized, well, you know, this is a test case and we like the outcome here, so let's try this again. And of course, they kept trying it, you know, over and over.
What do you think their bosses really were? Was it Eisenhower or the oil companies?
Well, it was you know, Dulles and the Dulles brothers, and that was Eisenhower's Secretary of State, so one of them, John Foster. And they were old, you know, moneyed interest, you know, in the legal profession and in oil too, I think.
Yeah, well, that they
the Catholic Church. I mean, actually, one of the Dulles nephews is a cardinal. go figure, you know.
Well, the deal was that the guy before the Shah wanted to nationalize the oil companies, right? Wasn't that? And then the CIA said, no, you can't do that, basically. And where did the Shah come from? Was he anybody before that, or
legend? Supposedly, because Iran was the Persian Empire, he was a descendant of one of the Persian kings.
Wow.
Bring back a king. You know, they had a king, bring him back.
Well, that was a part I don't remember so much of that book. John, did you ever read, or Jimmy, the Fall of the Dynasties? Was it?
The World War I era dynasties?
Yeah.
Not that particular book, but I mean, I've read, you know, about the dynasties that collapsed. You know,
well, this book was the book was all about, I don't know how many chapters, but they had a bunch of stuff about the Hohenzollerns. Those are the guys in Germany, right?
Yeah,
and how corrupt they were and how screwed up. Then they had a bunch of chapters on the guys in Austria. What was that? That was the
Habsburgs.
Then there was a bunch of chapters on the Romanovs. And then they did a bunch of stuff on the Ottomans, which I didn't know anything about. I mean, I never crossed that subject in history. And they were as bad as everybody else. I mean, I don't know who was the worst. I mean, the Romanovs had Rasputin running around telling everybody what to do. But they all were so corrupt. And in the background was this massive arms race. Population was growing. I mean, it was just this big mess, right? It's actually very similar to now in a lot of ways.
Well, the problem, too, and this is something that's, you know, the U.S. doesn't maybe quite see it with the same kind of sensitive, you know, eyes that the people these empires had, but they were always kind of unworkable empires. I mean, certainly the Romanov dynasty, you know, had this absolutely polyglot population, you know,
Okay, how many languages? One railroad? How many languages? What a mess! Yeah,
and the same thing with the Ottoman Empire, and the same thing with the Habsburgs. I mean, they had Muslims, they had Christians, they had, you know, the Balkan states, they had the, you know, the Germans, they had the Austrians. It was like, yikes, you know, and you know, the Spanish at one time too when they ran Spain.
Oh well, so this is. They said with the Habsburgs, they preferred to marry instead of go to war.
Yeah,
they married into a lot of land, even some in Italy, but they married into a lot of it. But yeah, they had a very big empire. I mean, Russia, you knew was collapsing. The Romanovs at the end there, even before Nicholas II, his father was. They were being led by a bunch of corrupt noblemen who didn't want the Tsar to really know what was going on. So the Tsar was sheltered for 100 years, knowing exactly what was going on. And yeah, Rasputin didn't exactly help, but the old saying was in the Romanovs, when the Tsar came through a town, they used to dress up the peasants so the Tsar thought everything was good. And he didn't fix up like a Hollywood set, fix up the houses, yep. And he would ride through town and he thought everything was fine. Never questioning what actually was happening.
Yes, ask me no questions, I'll tell you no lies.
the thing with Rasputin, he would have never gotten the kind of power or influence, you know, over the Roman royal family that he did had it not been for the hemophiliac heir to the throne.
Well, World War One was a family dispute.
Yeah,
I mean,
well, they had such an arms race that something was going to happen. I mean,
it was. You had the Kaiser, you know, cousin Willie had a deformed left hand or arm, and you know, the Tsarina was his cousin. He was his mom's sister, you know, they were all Victorian's children.
This is just the craziness going back and forth. This is nut job. Well, I mean, we don't really pay attention to a lot of the history, and it's like when these places blow. Well, we obviously didn't pay attention in Iraq when we blew that up, right? We didn't,
yeah.
I mean, there's three different groups living there. They don't pretty much hate each other. And we got one strong man on top of the thing. By the way, you see the thing I sent you last night, John and Jimmy, about the where did all Saddam's money go?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
It's you know, you look this stuff and you can't, you just shake your head and you go, yet another. Well, evidently, Saddam had how many billion dollars? 40 or something. Somehow, there's a thing that I've only seen a couple times that Wayne sends me. There's a group of people that try and keep track of the stealing of all the people that run places. When I say run places, presidents, kings, whatever they are, and how much money they're up to. And you look at this list, and it is enlightening / horrifying that you'll see, as I'm just talking off the top of my head here, like the deposed king of like Sudan or someplace, where it doesn't look to anybody like they got a pot to piss in, right? Yet the guy's managed to abscond with, you know, like $200 million somewhere. Somehow he managed to skim off whatever they did have, and they got the number one scam artist in the world. They've got Putin with like over $1 trillion that he's managed to scam out of Russia in some place. Well, they got Trump climbing up the wall real fast in this thing. And
well, you know, the government's money's my money.
Well, but I mean the point being that evidently Saddam had all his dough, and when he knew he was getting out the kids. What, they packed three semis up with cash, so it was like $1 billion in there. I don't know if they got that out of there, but the rest of the money was all in these Swiss banks, and somehow or most of it disappeared. Where do you think it? Who do you think has it? You think scumbags over there, scumbags here, the CIA? Where do you think it is?
Scumbags everywhere. Well, it's the same thing with the treasures in the museums. You know?
Yeah.
Where did that stuff end up? And that was, you know, fabulously valuable stuff, but, you know, it's unaccounted for. It's just like in that article you sent, you know, through poor record keeping. It's like, poor,
yeah.
How about no record keeping?
Well, how about we don't want a record keep?
Yeah, who wants records?
But I mean, I can't believe none of it came to people's sticky fingers here. Do you?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me if it did.
Well, how much family does he have? Because someone...
Well, the two daughters ended up where? And according to the article, they ended up in Switzerland. Gave them. They had some money. They sold some of their personal jewelry or something. Were able to live out their lives okay. Was it Switzerland they went?
Probably. They probably got access to that money in Switzerland.
Well, maybe, yeah. Maybe
they probably need the jewelry and stuff to get to Switzerland.
Yeah, maybe they had access to some of the stuff in Switzerland. There probably was some there. But you read this stuff and you just go, God, it becomes, I don't know, it becomes not a singular event. It's almost like a river of crap, isn't it?
Right. Well, it's the same thing with Napoleon, you know,
moving
the palaces in Europe. And just, all of this was like, you know, smash and grab, really.
You know, while we're on world history, and I did a paper on this in high school, but a long time ago, how long was it before Italy was essentially unified and Mussolini came along? It couldn't have been too long. Was it even 2 decades?
Well, 1870 is, you know, Garibaldi.
Garibaldi, when they became unified.
And then, you know, I mean, they had a monarchy. I mean, they still technically have a monarchy. But, you know, Mussolini's, you know, rise was after World War One, and it was Italy was a basket case.
I thought Italy didn't get together until right before, I mean, it was Garibaldi and Victor Emmanuel was the king, right?
Yeah, and that was, I mean, it was, you can't,
those that don't know what we're talking
about,
Rome happened. Italy had a bunch of city-states.
Oh, yeah.
Venice and right. All these other places. And Victor Emmanuel was the king of somebody up north, and eventually they put the whole thing together somewhat. But, I mean, you would never have thought the people from the south were in the same country as the people in the north. They never felt that way. They never were that way. And all of a sudden, there they were. And somewhere along the line, after World War One, Mussolini popped in. But he was way before Hitler, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he had his march on Rome in 21. And that's,
yeah, it was early.
That's, yeah, like 2 or 3 years before the beer hall putsch that landed.
Didn't he start out as a real conservative, like a regular politician kind of guy, and then just decided?
Well, he was always a liberal. You know, he's named after Benito Juarez. You know, the president of Mexico, who was, you know, a totally anti-Catholic, and, you know,
yeah,
and
he was liberal.
Very,
and then he goes
very rapidly socialistic.
This isn't nearly as good as just as being this massive right winger. I control everything. It's a lot easier this way than actually have to talk people into thinking the same way I think.
But, and he was a journalist. I mean, he wrote stuff you wouldn't think a fascist would write.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, if you start putting his stuff back at him, you say, this is the same guy?
Yeah, yeah.
He's a perfect example of all power corrupts, huh?
Well, and really, I mean, early on, the irony here, things got completely reversed by the time of, you know, World War II, but Hitler was just absolutely fascinated by Mussolini's rise.
Oh,
this
yeah.
is what he aspired to, because Mussolini had been pretty much all in place by 1926 or 27, the kind of model that Hitler was just dreaming about then.
Really fast after the war.
Yeah.
The war
yeah.
was
well, I mean, that's,
like, yeah,
it, the country had come to such a collapsed state, just morally, you know, it's the way it was, you know, just humiliated in World War One, and the, you know, the,
did they do much fighting in World War One? The Italians? They weren't that involved, were they?
They switched sides.
They switched sides.
They
were on the Austrian side, the German side,
yeah.
And then halfway they decided to pull the old switcheroo. We're on the winning team now.
Yeah, and then they had a seat at the Versailles Peace Conference, you know, Orlando, the premier. But it had just been, you know, the military defeats and the loss of life and the emigration. You know, the country was bleeding. You know, it was economically just in the basement.
Yeah, I wonder when my family came over. I think it was earlier than that, but not that much earlier. They were probably in the teens.
Mm-hmm.
All my Italian gang came over from there, and it's probably why they all left, because a lot of the places where they lived, my brother visited and said, God, why'd they leave? But evidently, things were tough there for a while.
Well, and things like, you know, the Messina earthquake in 1908, I mean, that just it destroyed the city. I don't know how many hundreds, that's only 100,000 people died or something.
Well, I'm trying to do the math. My grandmother died in, I think, 78. She was 83, so that puts her 1895, and she came over when she was like 9, so that's 1905 or 6 or something. So that would be before any of this mess.
Yeah, and that was, you know, there was a lot of, there was ferment there like there was in France, you know, the rise of, you know, the anti, you know, Catholic party, the socialists, the anarchists too. I mean, Italy was a hotbed of political dissent, and, you know, that's the trouble when a nation is that recent, and, you know, and it just kind of slammed together after having all these discrete states and principalities for 1,000 years. It wasn't an easy fit, and, you know, it was, you know, tough for the people in the lowest social strata to eke out a living. And they were just, you know, the U.S. was the haven for people that had no other, you know, options had they stayed there, really.
Well, yeah.
Same thing in Ireland, a lot of other places.
But, you know, a lot of this stuff, if you do the economic history of it, a lot of all this upheaval and all this politics and all the fighting is really because of economics.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people aren't getting, well, the revolutions are, only a few people are getting all the money. And I really think that the disparity here, whether it's, you know, whether it's the Democrats, and I think one thing I might, I mean, I know a lot of people disagree with me on some of my conclusions, which are, you know, it's fine with me, because if you got a better one, I'll jump on. I mean, I'm surely not fixated that way. I just want the solution, but I think a lot of people are not quite understanding the problem, and I think the problem now is really way worse in this country than it was 20 years ago. The K-shaped economy, as Larissa always says, is so embedded in the idea that, you know, somebody from the top, and people sort of still think this way. I know Carl does, and I learned a lot from Carl, but he's got this view that, like, if the Irish were never here, you would have had to pay more for people to dig the I&M Canal, and somehow if you paid enough, people would have come off of Astor Street or come off of the, you know, some place in New York and sent their kids out here to dig the canal. I don't buy that. I don't buy that at all. I mean, there's no way. That's just not going to happen. And I know he's absolutely right about the visas where the people come over here like slaves that can only work for one company at less than they would have to pay somebody here. I think that's totally wrong. But the idea that somehow if you yank all the Hispanics out of the Home Depot, meaning that all of a sudden their hourly wage goes from 15 to 25, that all the white and black kids are going to show up and stand out in front of the Home Depot, that's not happening, John. It's not going to happen. I mean, the people that have come here from other places always seem to do the work for a while. I mean, the Irish did the work on the railroad going west. The Chinese did the work on the railroad coming east. And one of the big problems in the country here at the time was, okay, now we got all these Chinese people here. The railroad's done. How do we get rid of them? And I think they felt the same way about the Irish. And they were white. Although they were Irish, so I guess it's not really white. Is that really white? I don't know. But it seems like we at least, I think, have to look at the same scenario time and time again, right? Yeah. It never changes, does it?
No, I mean, but the Irish, I mean, their step up, they really kind of justified their ascendancy. You know, they started to control the police departments in the big cities. And
how many years? This is long after they died digging a canal and died putting a train out west. It's long after that.
Well, within 20, 30 years, yeah.
Well, but the railroad was...
That's a very short time, really, considering the destitution they came from.
They built the canal in 1860. They weren't in charge of the Chicago Police Force to 1920 or 10.
Oh, no, before that.
All right.
In certain districts, anyway.
It was still two generations, because the guys digging the canal all died.
My great-grandfather became a cop in 1887. This is right after the Haymarket Riot, so this is kind of a dangerous job in the 1880s.
Yeah.
But he was certainly not the only Irish cop.
The Irish made their strides politically in a city they didn't move. Same thing happened to the Italians. But, you know, they all had the same story. We're bringing you over here for the crummy work. And by the way, for the other stuff, what was it? No Irish need apply. Nina, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, it's sort of the same. Everybody has always wanted to keep the new group out. Am I wrong? unless they're doing something that nobody else wants to do, then the minute they're done, well, then we're going to get rid of them, right? I mean, this is human nature. Why do people have country clubs? Because nobody else can come in. You shut the door the minute I'm in here. I mean, am I right or wrong?
Well, this is traditionally, you know, how, you know, the Great Migration, you know, from the south to the north of African Americans,
yeah.
what really, you know, started the racial ferment in Chicago was it 1905 when they had the stockyard strike, and of course, you know, the union was closed to black workers. The stockyards, you know, went out on strike. The Packers went down south, recruited all these blacks to come up, and, you know, they're strike breakers. They took the jobs at the stock markets. They weren't union members. And then once we're out on strike, like, wait a minute, here comes, you know, an imported underclass that's, you know, taking our jobs away. And this was the same thing with the draft riots in 1863,
yeah,
with the Irish and the blacks. And this when you start pitting the lower, you know, levels of the socioeconomic groups against each other, as, you know, here comes a new flock of people threatening your jobs, which you've just learned to appreciate in the last, you know, 5 or 10 years, and already you're being under attack. This was a classic kind of racial war tactics in a way.
Well,
and I mean, it was fomented. I mean, I don't know, you know, people, wasn't just racial bigotry, but it was a kind of an economic threat that unfortunately had all sorts of racial overtones to it.
Well, it always does. It's whether it's a nationality or whatever it is. I mean, it's, and nobody ever bitches. You'll never see anybody, and like I say, nobody's more articulate and knows more about it than Carl, but you'll never see it. I'm not picking on him. I'm the one who doesn't bring it up. Why, if that's happening, why doesn't anybody have a bitch at how much money the head of Microsoft makes? He's doing it so there's more money there for him, right? And he's getting the dough. It's not like
the same thing with the packing houses and the stockyards. You know, they didn't care who worked for them. They didn't care what the city became because of their policies. They were going to make money either way. So,
well, the original, I don't know what he would have been. Well, he would have been a great uncle, I guess. My little family history. My grandfather was Michael Howe. Okay, well, before him, my grandmother was married to the older brother, the original Tom Howe. And he, I think, was killed. He was electrocuted somewhere in the stockyards. And I don't think there was any. And like 6 years later, she married the brother. She didn't have any kids with the first guy. And I don't think they were married very long. I mean, he checked into Mount Olivet in 1907, so they couldn't have been married very long. Was there any kind of workman's camp? Or did they care less?
Oh, no.
Haul the body out, and who else can be an electrician? Haul the next guy in? I mean,
nothing.
I mean, it was a brutal life for really everybody. I mean, whether you were, well, if you were in the, I'm going to say when the lady from, the lame virgin, the news lady that Roosevelt sent around the country, or Hopkins did to see what was.
Oh, Loretta Hickok?
Yeah. I mean, what did she say? In order, she thought the people in the coal mines had the worst gig. And the people, the sharecroppers, had the second gig. Who was third? I don't know who the third one was. But, I mean, there was all kinds of people to pick from. But the coal miners, because it was not only horrible work, but your health was horrible. Sharecroppers were essentially what happened to most of the slaves, right? Some guy owned a property, and he gave...
And whites, too.
Yeah, they weren't all black. But he had maybe, say, 100 acres, and he'd give 20 acres to 5 different people to rent? Isn't that the term sharecropping?
Yeah, and you'd lease your equipment and everything as part of it, so you'd pay for that with your crop share.
So you never made any money. You never got anywhere. Because whatever it was, he just took the dough. And the weird part, I mean, some of the stuff about this country, when you see how low we can go, a bunch of people from the north went down there because Roosevelt put through some kind of program where farmers got... money, because during the 20s, the agrarian part of the country was in a depression the whole way. It's sort of like what I talk about now, where even though the market goes up every day, 80% of the people are, I'm not saying a depression, but they're in some kind of a minor recession, because there's no way they're, I don't know if you heard the other day, John, I went through some numbers, I like to interject this stuff. From January 2020 to April of 2026, money supply was up 48%. The admitted to CPI was up 128, or 28%, not 128, was it valued at 1.28, and the hourly earnings are up like 21. So I'm going to say in those three numbers, the real inflation, which probably more like 40, the admitted to inflation, which is 28, and people's hourly income up 21, if you take the stock market out of it, the wealth piece, I'm going to say in those three numbers is 95% of the distance you see now, the people bitching back and forth, are in those three numbers. And they're blaming this person, blaming that person. You have a president telling you who to blame. Then the blacks, or not the blacks, but the Democrats, or even some of the blacks are telling you who to blame. Everybody's telling you to blame somebody else. And in fact, the blame is in these three numbers, in my opinion. I know it puts me too narrow, but do you agree or disagree?
I there's a lot of truth in it.
I mean, everybody's blaming somebody else. Because the fact is, 85% of the people are not growing. They're going the other way in terms of actual... I'm not talking about wealth. If you happen to have, you know, dad left you 2,000 shares of Micron, well, you're doing fine. Okay, I get that part. I have clients like that. But even they recognize, you know, their earnings is not kept up with the other stuff. And even though we're way better than 1929, when I say better, only 7% of the people had any stock at all in 1929. Now with 401k plans, IRAs, I'm going to guess it's, I think it's as high as 40, Jen?
Yeah.
It's got to be. It's not 7, that's for sure. But I don't think it's 80 or 85 either. I think it's, Jimmy, have any idea? What would you guess? How many people in this country own shares of stock? Or any kind of an ETF or something, or a mutual fund. It's got to be pushing 50.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people have 401ks. The individual guy, the person that owns actual stocks, probably less, but people that have 401ks have ETFs or mutuals.
Yeah,
no question.
Same thing. So it's nowhere near it. And that's why you don't, I think that's why you don't get the hue and cry based on wages and prices as much as you do, because the wealth bubble's actually pretty big. I mean, you can, I don't have any clients like this. You can only bitch so much if you own 3,000 shares of Chevron when the gas is up $1 a gallon because they ran more, right? Because you've done way better on your Chevron than you have in the losing at the pump, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know someone who's like that.
This gas is ridiculous. Yeah, but look at your stock. Oh, I deserve that. Okay, then.
You know, it's really different now, though, Thomas. Yeah, there was always, you know, an underclass of people, you know, from the peasantry of the world who would come in and do the most menial, unskilled jobs that needed to be done and, you know, live in the most, you know, benighted conditions and pretty much be on their own. Well, you know, when it came to dying and being buried and everything else, nobody gave them anything. Now we don't have so much work that requires unskilled people to do it. Maybe in some landscaping or gardening business, it doesn't take much education to do it. It's hard work. A lot of people don't want to do it, but you've got an underclass that doesn't have really much work to do, and they become experts at fleecing the system. So you have, you know,
oh yeah,
all the safety nets that nobody had 150 years ago that are now being, you know, warped into something that's more than just a social network thing, but it's like a funnel for international finance of money being taken away from taxpayers here to fund God knows what. And this is a formula that nobody would have dreamed possible 150 years ago. This is hardly what immigration signified then. And now it's turned into some kind of...
I think there's actually an awful lot of work to be done that's not getting done.
But it's not... But what I'm saying is that it isn't like the reason to import these people is to give them these shovels and picks and tell them to go to work at all. But whatever work needs to be done, it's not being directed towards or has anything to do with the immigrants that are being invited in.
Well, I mean, in some areas, obviously in agriculture it is. I mean, there's some areas where it isn't. It seems to be in some of the high-tech stuff.
But yeah, but there's not a lot of immigrants in Chicago working in agriculture.
No. But I will say this. I mean, all you have to do is drive around the country, which I haven't done that much lately, but I'm going to say every single house needs a lot of work in the last 20 years when people haven't done so well. Well, you need a...
And that's skilled work, Tom, and we've completely dropped the ball.
You can learn it pretty quick.
This is not something you want any old slob doing.
I know, but you every good carpenter has two helpers. I mean, it's. I'm saying to say
that you
got to
know how to read a blueprint and everything else. Still,
I'm just saying a lot of stuff is decaying. I mean, if we had, how many bridges do we need to fix? I mean, I know what you're saying. I mean,
but everyone.
But it's not like there's no room for. The problem is nobody here wants to do it because it. You do it for 10 years and then there's no job. We've had. I'm going to say zero leadership in terms of this kind of stuff for how many years? 30? We can't get. The idea is we need whatever the two parties bitch about back and forth. Somebody has to get everybody back in at Camp David or wherever the hell you're going to go, the local Waffle House, I don't care, and say, look, even though we may argue about all this other stuff, we need to have some kind of a plan for the next 30 years. This is what we're going to do with our infrastructure. I'm not talking about, you know, Wi-Fi or the Biden's plan or anything like that. We need to do how many million hours. You know, I get this wacky views of the world because I went. Chris took me. We had a bunch of people in from China. He did, and they were lecturing in our office. All these people from China, right? And we took. Well, he took these guys, and I went with on a barge tour in the Illinois River. I was flabbergasted. I'd never been on a barge. We actually were on this barge and back and forth. We went through one of the locks. John, have you ever gone through one of those real locks?
Only at Lake Michigan.
The one at Lake Michigan's like 3 feet.
Yeah.
The ones in the Illinois River are like 100 feet or 200 feet. And you're sitting there going, you're at the bottom of this thing. And you're looking up and you're going.
You look at the steel door.
Right? Yeah. Wait a minute. And all of a sudden, this water starts coming in, and up you go, and it's or down you go when you come back the other way. It's really something. But anyway, the guy was talking about we have not had the only lock and dam that has been redone is the last one. What the hell? Where is it? It's down by north of St. Louis, right where the Illinois River, I think, goes into the Mississippi. Anyway, that one was redone, you know, 40 years ago, and a whole group of barges can get through there. All the rest of them. You've got to take the barge train apart and put them through two by two so you can put like six at a time when every barge train is 12. So the guy's got to go through twice. And how much that costs in terms of time and material every time. All these things were built during the Depression. And he said every one of them, if we were to put the Alton's the only new one. Now, in Illinois, we don't have any new ones. Every one in the Ohio River is new, or it's like it's second generation. Who was the old fart from West Virginia that just died? Just died a few years ago to senator. He was there forever. How was that guy's name, John? Boy, Wayne would know.
Rockefeller?
No, West Virginia. Rockefeller?
Yes. John D. Rockefeller V.
No, it was not.
Was a senator from West Virginia for years.
Some old grumpy guy used to be on TV once. Anyway, he managed to get all new, not new anymore, lock and dams on the Ohio River. Anyway, we don't have. But the guy was talking about one of these things. One of them is a million carpenter hours and God knows what else of concrete hours. The amount of work it takes, it's not like we don't have anything to do for people here. But I mean, I'm saying if you have a 30-year plan, if you and I were younger and all of a sudden we had kids, if you believed in your country enough to do that, maybe you would actually recommend to your son, like my friend Bill, who just went to his, you recommend him for civil engineering. Bill was on it 2-3 times before he passed, and what did he say? It's not something anybody wants to do now. Because you don't know if you're getting a job, you don't know if you get laid off, you don't even know if you're halfway around the world. But he goes, it's an amazing profession. All these people are older. All the people who work for the city, or the states, the people in the highway groups. He goes, these are really bright guys. They're all old. Nobody wants those jobs. Because nobody believes they're going to be here in a few years. But he says, there's nothing wrong with them. You make a lot of dough. You build stuff. And you meet a lot of good people. I mean, but the whole flavor of that, because of start again, stop again, is wrong. I think if you had a leadership group, and I don't care which party they come from, could get the other party to agree, even though we don't care who's going to be a president 8 or 10 or 15 years from now, we still are going to be doing this. We all at least agree this is what we have to do. It's sort of like we all agree we got to have an army type of thing. We don't have any of that leadership. We didn't get it from this guy. We didn't get it from Biden. I don't think we got much of it from Obama either.
It would be a tough sell today, Tom, to do what the country did. It did, I think, fairly efficiently in the Depression with things like the Works Progress Administration and the Civilian Conservation Corps. And my uncle, who married my mom's sister, he worked for the Civilian Conservation Corps, putting in roads at Mammoth Cave, you know, at the state park. This is 1932, 33, 34 maybe. But it was a quasi-military thing. You know, there was a hierarchy. You camped almost like you were in, a military, base of some kind. And you took orders, and you did work, and you ate, together. It was a very disciplined, controlled situation. But my uncle never stopped singing his praises. He said it was the highlight of his life, because he learned how to build a road. And he also learned about all the different people who were completely out of work, had no earnings for several years, and were just so glad to have a job. And, they were great guys, and, lavish praise on the whole thing. I can't imagine something like that ever.
Well, we did the interstate highway system in the 50s.
Yeah, but that too, I can't imagine that happening now.
Why? The question is why? It's funny, people talk about, and how many times on the show we've had people bitching and moaning back and forth. By the way, good discussion when I say bitching and moaning back and forth. There's a headline here, Chevron is to fuel massive Microsoft data center in Texas with natural gas. That's interesting. Well, you run a pipeline. They've been flaring off a lot of this natural gas, the fracking areas, right? Run a pipeline from there to the place, and that's not a bad way to do it, is it?
Yeah.
Anyway, if you look around at the energy right now, whenever we talk about energy, we're talking about, oh, God, we're talking about AI centers, we're talking about cars, we better get 50 miles a gallon out of a car. Jen, you walk out your front door and look at the people on your block, look at the houses. How many of them couldn't with, I'm going to say, in your neighborhood, they're probably at least all insulated. They probably all have some sort of storm windows, but that's not countrywide. What could we save if we upped the energy efficiency of the average house? What's the housing stack in some of these areas? 100 years old? 90 years old? What a set of new windows and some insulation and maybe a decent roof. What could we save countrywide? More than you could ever save in cars, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, we were talking about this last week or the week before with Nancy about, the housing stock that's gotten old and tired and needs, to be fixed up. And now it's cheaper to just knock the thing down and put up some, glitzy excuse for, a single-family home that's far too expensive for the average home buyer anymore. So it's not about, we could do this, but it's cheaper to just destroy it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get that. I don't either.
I mean, but, I can't find anybody kind of singing another song about this or getting any traction by doing it. I just it's not happening anyway.
Well, I think the message here is just because the market's going up, I think the political fighting and the leadership we've had on both sides for a while has caused a general degradation of what I think is the United States. And I want it righted. And I don't care which party does it. I don't really. Give me somebody with his head on straight, who's somewhat of a moderate that can talk to both sides. I could care less which party he's from, and I actually would probably think it's only going to come from a third party, but I don't see that happening either. I don't care what party. I voted for all kinds of Republicans that I thought were better than the Democrats at the time. I mean, and I voted for Democrats. I mean, and not voted for them a second time. So I don't have an issue with that. But somewhere along the line, we are degrading. How do we spend $15 million on an outdoor fountain and have the thing fall apart in 3 weeks? What? How do we do that? who's the moron you hired? Was there a bid? Did anybody even go the design? How do you do that? Is that just a symptom of a deeper rot here or what?
Yeah, well, it is a deeper rot. I mean, look at all the construction that exploded in the late 90s, 2000s. In neighborhoods like Lakeview and Irving Park, where old places that were okay in their day had gotten a little shabby, needed upgrading. They were raised, knocked out. And then you had all these cinder block constructed homes that were designed to start falling apart in 20 years. It's stuff you would never have built, you know, from an ethical standpoint in the 1920s or 30s, you know, with, you know, face brick, glazed brick that was designed to last. No, it's not make it look good. Get some clown to buy it for $1 million and then watch the whole thing fall apart in 20. This is kind of what I think a lot of neighborhoods have inherited here, just in Chicago. But it's the same kind of culture around the country. Make it fast, make it expensive, and make sure it collapses pretty soon. You got to rebuild the whole thing again. This is certainly what public works has become.
It is.
Street repair or anything else. It isn't about making it last. Who wants an asphalt job that's going to last forever? No, you need this contract for next year, too. So let's make it so it all falls apart before next year, and they have to hire us back again.
Well, the street by Audrey, the one next to me, was, you know, they dug up all the, you know, they burn off the asphalt, right? Now, in the city, it's a little bit of a problem. When that was designed, when this was first designed, when somebody first invented it, we're talking about stripping and then putting a new asphalt layer on a street. It was designed in such a way where you really could do it all in one day. I mean, it never really happened. Now, the city, of course, has all the manhole covers there. It'd all be done kind of individually, so you can't really do it. But they just did a street out by Audrey's. One week, they scooped the whole thing out, you know, burned all the other stuff off, took it apart, and it couldn't have been 3 weeks, John. They now have this amazingly, I've never seen an asphalt surface that's grooved before. It is really well done. I mean, really well done. And it's 2-3 weeks. It's the city of Orland. Or maybe it was a county. I don't know. But somebody way different than you see in the city where the thing's liable to sit there bumping over it for how long. I mean, we can do this if we want to. Now, I don't know who got the job, who did it, but I mean, I never saw people work so fast. Now, they didn't have, you know, the 1 mile stretch I'm talking about, they didn't have, you know, 50 manhole covers out there that you have to do individually. I get that part. When I say manhole, those are all going to be natural gas or whatever. Those all have to be done in concrete before you go back over again. So you really can't do it in a couple of days. But the street next to me would be Seminary. No, I meant Seminary. No, the one next to me. What's the one just east of me? Whatever it is.
Montana.
Kenmore.
And it stayed like that forever. And all of a sudden, on the weekends, I see this group. I'm going to say it was a minority group. And my instincts are, John, that somebody got the contract for a good price, and instead of doing it themselves, farmed it out on a subcontract. Which, if you think back to Hurricane Katrina, I was reading this story about all these people in Washington, all Bush's buddies. They got these contracts to clean up New Orleans. And this guy, one of this artists, this writer traced one of them. When he got down to it, there's a guy with a truck and three guys that were here illegally with shovels cleaning the thing. It was the fourth, subcontract down. The people in Washington didn't do any of the work. I mean, at least, I think in World War II, I'm not naive enough, I hope, to think that the guy who had the PT boat contract didn't somehow nurse, you know, 5 or 7% more for the thing than maybe he should have or could have. That's what Harry Truman was always chasing those guys down. That was his shtick, right?
Yeah.
But so if you and I are the guys connected enough to where we get Jimmy to do this, because he'd be demanding 7 instead of 6%. All of a sudden we got our 7.
Kidding? 8.
There you go. See, you can see where that guy comes from.
I come from, you know, I mean, John mentioned about, you know, the construction business. Let's just hit on our new director of intelligence, Mr. Pulte.
God. Oh yeah, let's not go there.
You know, that's what he does. He builds homes.
Yep.
And the first thing, you know, he showed up down last Thursday. Who to fire? And by the way, do I get access to a government jet?
Well, you got to have that.
You know, I live in Florida. I live in Chicago, and I got to go to D.C.
What if Pulte gets on Southwest Air and he's sitting next to you?
I highly doubt that he gets on South.
I'm saying, but
there.
You can't have that. You can't have you complaining to him about it. Anyway. But
no. I mean,
I'm just kidding, by the way.
I know, but others do go. Some go economy. A lot of them do go first class. But this guy shows up and says, "Do I get a jet?"
I don't understand how come we don't get to ride on John Flanagan's jet. But anyway, John, I'm saying is in those days nobody wants 7% to be, I guess, stolen. But as long as the guy did the stuff, did some decent PT boat engines, and the money, the three of us go down to the local tap and spend it, it's not the end of the world. I mean, a little bit of corruption is, you know, there's a little bit of grease to the wheel, right? I mean, we're not running up a huge tab in a Swiss bank account and leaving and buying a yacht in Sweden. I mean, we're spending it in the hood. And, oh, by the way, we're probably paying for people a little more than we would have otherwise. And it's not the same as not even doing the job, is it?
You mean like the reflecting pool?
Yeah. I mean, my question there is, I would have a question. There was a no-bid contract. And so Trump's people lobbed it off to somebody. Did the guy even do the job, or did he lob it off to another person? I think he probably did the job, but I'm not positive. But the whole idea, if I see something subcontracted, John, to me, it's like a deer in the headlights or a red flag in front of a bull. I just think, wait a minute, this thing is way more corrupt. If you could turn around and just give it to somebody else and you don't even do it.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of these subcontracting entities are really just shell corporations to fulfill some kind of minority incentive, and they lie about the composition of the firm just to get the business, and an upstanding firm would be cut out of the deal completely. So not only does the wrong people get it, but the work doesn't get done, or it doesn't get done right, or it costs twice as much or three times as much. I mean, you look at the Obama Center, I was trying to figure out online how much money is really owed to these subcontractors for work they said they did, and they're out there in bankruptcy because they haven't been paid. But it's a kind of a microcosm of what can always go wrong, but is more likely to go wrong.
Chad, do you have any idea how those contracts? We got a few minutes here, not that much, but are these? I say this from experience. When you go out to bid for a contract, there's essentially two types. One is you expect the subcontractor. Let's say, for instance, I'll use a railroad car example. You're going to go out and you're going to go out for bid on seats, and you're building 100 cars. Okay, so the seat's a big item. It's a real big item. Now, when you write the contract, you can either say, "Okay, John, Jim, if you guys bid on this and you get the bid, we're going to give you 10% on day one. We're going to give you another 20% when we approve the first seat. You get another 25%. So in other words, the money's always going to be ours. You don't have to go out and borrow the dough. You're not going to get your profit till the end, but you're never going to have to, probably never going to have to go out and actually borrow a dime to do this. It's called progress payments. And now a firm, say the size of us, might be able to compete in something like that. Now, you can do it the other way and say, I'm only paying you when the seats show up, which means if it's a $6 million contract, the three of us's got to go to some bank or someplace and say, we need $6 million. Okay, so if we don't get paid at the end of the profit part on contract A, it's a royal pain in the ass, but we're not out of business. If we don't get paid on contract B and scenario B, it's a real problem, because now we owe this bank, $5.5 million. We're only going to make $500,000 on the deal. We're only going to make 10%. Now we're in Dutch for five and a half. So when these people, when you say contractors for like the Obama Center and stuff, are those guys on the hook for all the material and labor or not? If it's just the final payment, it's not good, but it's not life-threatening necessarily, although it could be 2 years of work down the drain. But you think they're on the hook for like the concrete and the ink and everything else?
Well, it could be. I can't really tell. I mean, I can see it's going to be a rabbit hole that I didn't want to get too deeply involved in. But from my experience in construction escrows, I mean, if you've got, you know, a general contractor who has a list of subcontractors that they have, you know, made an agreement with to provide X, you know, whatever materials, you know, services, whatever, and this is in their total bid amount by which, you know, they got the contract approved in the first place, and they're getting financing through a construction lender of some kind, but it will be done on draws that are, you know, bulk payments to the general contractor to distribute to these subcontractors through an escrow, and I was working for the company that was the escrowee on it. You know, surrender a check in an agreed upon amount in exchange for a waiver of lien by some supplier or some workman for the work they had done, and they had, here's what I'm owed, and here we have a check written on this title company to pay for that, and this comes out of the construction, you know, loan draw that has been funded to the title company and however many millions of dollars for this stage of construction. And the thing was always carefully timed for what needed to be done and what the architect was requiring to be seen as having been done so far, that so that the rest of the work can proceed. And it sounds like some of these controls with the Obama Center, they never really worked the way they're supposed to. That's the only thing I can figure out. I don't know if it was because they had a general contractor who was less experienced in this kind of work, or subs that were already in kind of a precarious financial state before they took on.
Well, I hope the poor subs like aren't on the hook for the wiring and the conduit and all that stuff and the fixtures that they didn't have to put up the money for the stuff. I hope they didn't.
No, and that would be unusual. And you know, there's very few companies that could do that, or at least they couldn't do it on, you know, more than one project at a time, that's for sure, because they'd never be able to conduct business that way. But I can't, you know, throw any names around. Or
yeah, but you know what, John? If the contract is written the other way, you pretty much kick everybody out except one or two people. Because only a couple people can actually finance it, and they'll demand a lot more money.
Right. I mean, and, you know, the thing with the Obama Center, too, I mean, it's now double what, you know, the initial estimates were. So that it implies to me that there was all sorts of, you know, backtracking on, you know, subcontractors' deals.
You don't suppose the same guy who did the Obama Center did the reflecting pool, do you?
Well,
hey, how about we go to break? I think we probably have Audrey and waiting in the wings. S&P futures up 4, NASDAQ futures up 112. Stock, hey, guess who's up $55? Micron. Unbelievable. I'll try and get on break. I'll try and figure out where that thing is now. How much times revenue? We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Are you nuts?
Hello, no face, Action Jacks. I'm somehow Matt Byrne on the board, Jim Lawler in the studio, John Flanagan on the phone. We should have Audrey on the phone. S&P futures up 5, NASDAQ futures up 119. It looks like, from what we can discern here, that the negotiations are actually going halfway decently. Let's hope that's the truth. I mean, we had one stop last night on the Israeli doing some stuff in Lebanon. Evidently, well, by one report, they knocked off 49 people. I guess, whatever. It's moving forward, so that appears to be the latest, so that would be good news. What do we got here? Just looking at Micron, it was up $52 today. They're up to $25, 24 or 5 hours revenue per share, 24 or 5 times revenue per share. That's like double what things were in 2000 when the market collapsed. Of course, it's different now because they've been kind of anointed as a company that the president likes. So I wouldn't, so you got to be careful because it might actually be worth this much, whatever the hell that even means. Makes it more difficult for guys to value stocks for sure. See over in as soon as my machine comes up here, the UK's Starmer resigns. Although he's going to be here another 3 months, so it's not like he's out today. That's a little odd. But over in Asia, we have the Nikkei is up 1,100 points, 1.5%. Hang Seng down 156.6%. Shanghai up 72, 1.8. So Shanghai and the Nikkei are loving what's going on with the, they're celebrating what's going on in Geneva, but really they're pouring money into the system, in my opinion. DAX up 28.1%, not much there. FTSE up 57 with their guy resigning. I don't know if that's the reason for that or not. Kekeron down 28.3, so marginally higher over in Europe. Just as a way of review, because it was a while ago, last Thursday, S&P was up 80 and NASDAQ was up 496. So it was a big up day last Thursday. Bonds up 4 basis points, 4.49. So we're pushing that 4.5 number again in the 10-year. Oil down 83 cents, 75.77. And we've got Arbop down a penny, 298. So again, add 70 cents to $1.20 there, and that's kind of what you're paying. I paid 383, so that's that story. Gold down $20 to $42.25. Silver up 14 cents, $66.46. Foreign exchange, dollar is still high. Boy, euro's down to 114.6. British pound 132.7. Those are numbers we have not seen in quite a while. Crypto up 834, 64.972. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. It's currently 7:38 on June 22nd, 2026. Weather for Chicago, 60 degrees at O'Hare and 61 at Midway. Partly cloudy downtown. Today, high of 71 and partly cloudy. Slight chance of showers around Midway. Tonight, low of 56 and mostly clear. Let's go over to sports real quick. Yesterday for the Chicago's MLB teams, Cubs game postponed against Blue Jays. That was due to rain. They are set for a makeup on August 6th. Meanwhile, White Sox lost against Tigers 5-4. White Sox are 39 wins to 37 losses this season. Tonight, Cubs are back with Mets and Sox are back with Guardians. Over to FIFA, winners yesterday include Japan, Spain, Egypt, a tie between Belgium and Iran, 0-0, as well as Uruguay and Cape Verde, 2-2. Today we'll see Argentina versus Austria, France with Iraq, Norway and Senegal, and finally Jordan with Algeria? It's Algeria, yes. I wrote it Elyria, but it is definitely Algeria.
Algeria.
Back to you, Tom.
The other big news today is Alan Greenspan, dead at 100.
Yikes.
Yeah, it's a...
not a good way to wake up?
No, it's a... 100 is a good number, but if you're 100, I'm sure you want to make it to 101.
For sure.
John, do you subscribe to the theory? Do we have Audrey?
Yes, we do, yes.
Do either one of you subscribe to the theory that no matter how old you are, 10 years older than you is old?
Yeah, I was just getting started, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what? So it's funny you said 100. One of my
dear clients, who real estate clients, who ended up being a very good friend of mine. Her name was Josephine, and she, when I had first moved, it's one of the first places I ever purchased. She came over, knocked on my door, and she introduced herself and said, "You know, we always go for a walk every day, and you're welcome to go with a bunch of ladies who walk around the complex." And she was always so sweet, and turned out she owned like some high fashion boutique, like back in the 50s. And she had always said she wanted to live to be 100. And her place had the building had caught on fire from roofers. They had redone it. Everybody got to, and she remodeled it into this place that looked like a 25-year-old lived there. And she said, "I'm going to live to be 100 and enjoy this place." And then I don't care. And 2 days later, 2 days after her 100th birthday, she literally dropped dead in front of her door.
Whoa,
man.
But she was the nicest person in the world. So that's what she wanted. And she was healthy until the time God took her home. It was she was a wonderful, wonderful person. Just brought her memory back when you said that.
What's he been doing the last year? Has he been lecturing some, Jan, or has he just been hanging? I don't know. I haven't heard the name.
Lecturing at 100, give me a break.
He was still married to Andrea Mitchell, wasn't he? As far as I know.
I think so.
Yeah, I don't remember him being, you know, in the limelight or, you know, on the national stage or anything. So,
sometimes you just got to know when to quit.
Yeah.
Well, he was there quite a while, and I love the term irrational exuberance. I wonder what he'd say now.
He was a protege of Ayn Rand, you know, the positivist philosopher, The Fountainhead, and Atlas Shrugged, and all those books.
Yeah.
But He was an acolyte of hers from way back.
I love the way he talked in such a garbled tone. He must have wrote something, I'm going to say this, write down five words, and then the next hour he'd make the five words into like 200.
Right. The Fed's Guide to English Usage. You know, yeah. Unbelievable.
What they used to call those...
I know somebody like that.
Yeah. Well, remember... what they used to call him back? Who wrote the first novel was what? Tom Jones?
It's probably the first one. One of the first ones in English. The other was like Clarissa Harlow. They're the same era, pretty much. But yeah, I mean, they were like in multiple volumes.
Well, they used to write. They used to write for the newspapers,
right? And they were epistolary novels, where the whole thing was just here are the letters of character so and so. So you know, they told the story as if this was just a box of letters that had been salvaged from these two made-up people, and here's what they said to each other. So that was really the kind of first...
Well, they got paid by the word, by the paper, right?
Oh, Dickens, yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And then they bound the thing after all being in the papers.
Yeah, they published... It was in serial form, and then they published it at the end.
Well, Ed, what's going on in your world? The economy's up, down, all over the place, but I guess it's fairly steady in your business. Nancy was talking about how when comes out with mortgages now, sometimes the taxes and the insurance have become more and more important than whether it's 6.1% or 6 or 6.25%. I mean, obviously, if it's a 5% difference, it's a big difference, because the people getting the mortgages are really scrambling to make ends meet. Nobody can afford. A lot of people can't afford like a big repair after somebody gets in the place.
The same thing that's been going on for about the past 4 or 5 years now. It's nothing new. The only thing that's new is the change in rates, but you adjust, you adapt like anything else, and they did tick down a little bit this week.
Yeah, they did this week, but they're up again today for some reason. I don't quite know why, but well, you're kind of bouncing in and out. We can hear you loud and clear, and then that's all. Are you talking into the mic the way you're supposed to? Can you even hear us? I think Odd's internet thing isn't... She's not happy with those guys. Odd, you're bouncing in and out on this end. I don't think she's in at all. But, I don't know. Until Odd gets back on, John, what is going on? I saw two or three more buildings down here go for like next to nothing. The building that Citadel was in.
Yeah. And that's the record-setting one for the highest sale price, I think, in the last 7 or 8 years. And it's still way off what it was, it was built for in 2006. So that's kind of a success story. It sounds ironic, but It's I think it sold for $137 million, which, you know, way below what it's worth. You know, but apparently that's all it's worth, and that's kind of the high end. And that's a very nice building, and it's not that old, so it's not really the kind of test case you want to apply to other places, because there's so many other buildings in downtown Chicago that don't come anywhere near that in terms of their attractiveness or viability. So it's still a pretty dire picture.
What, hopefully we get Odd back here, but one of the guys that comes to my brother's on Sunday, he's an iron worker. He was working in the hotel by the casino, but evidently the iron work done is there is done or something. He's about to start on an office tower at like 500 or 600 West Madison or something. Why, if we're having all these kinds of problems here in the downtown area, why are we building office towers six blocks away? What am I missing?
Well, I think those, you know, I've noticed that too. I mean, when I came in on the Ohio Street ramp just a couple of weeks ago, you know, I couldn't believe that there was construction everywhere in like the Fulton District and, you know, the West Loop. But, you know, it's kind of like it's cheaper and more attractive to build something with every modern feature that you can, you know, get together and have it in an area that's more attractive than right in the loop. And you'll make money on it. So it's really sad to me that, you know, it only makes a difference of about a mile or so between the buildings that, you know, can't make a go of it because they're just in the wrong location and it's not going to change anytime soon. So you go a mile away and build something just the way you want it. And they don't have to be massive buildings. You know, they could be 10, 20 stories. And you'll have people, you know, standing in line to sign a lease to it. So I'm just kind of, it breaks my heart because I think that's what's eventually going to like relocate downtown Chicago if there is such a thing anymore. And it's going to be a much more dispersed and a less beautiful and less dramatic space than what we're used to.
Well,
okay, I'm back.
Yeah.
Hi, Audrey.
We're just talking about the office buildings going up west of the loop and ones. Not everyone in the loop, everybody's the idea that everything in the loop is old and decrepit. It's not. Some of these buildings are...
Like we don't have enough empty office buildings?
Well, that was my point. And in a, anyways, we're talking about one of my nephew's friends is going to be iron worker in one of these new places going up at like 600 West, which... 600, which side of the expressway is that, John? Is that the other side or this side?
It could be right on the... Like 500 is where the expressway is around Monroe and Madison Streets.
So it's just on the other side.
Right, it's probably just west of it, yeah.
Yeah, who got that contract?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a, well, I mean, it's the thing. You know, I think there's absolutes in this world, and one of them is if you have an incredible transportation system, which only a few cities really have. New York, probably the best. Chicago, Philly's got one. Boston's got one. Then you got other people who got. The Bay Area, probably, I guess you can count that. If that ever becomes a negative instead of a positive, you can't let that happen. And I think that's what's happening here. I mean, what do you guys think? I mean, the idea is everybody's supposed to be able to get to your place cheaply. Well, now you don't want the people, unfortunately, they can get to your place cheaply. And that's a real... I think that's... You can't let things happen like that. And yet we sort of have... Am I right or not? I mean, why would anybody want to be in the West Loop instead of the Loop, the way it used to be? I mean, there's buildings here, there's universities here, there's transportation here. I mean, you don't want the transportation, or am I wrong?
It's become, you know, a problem to have easy access.
Yeah.
Up to a place, and you know, that's unfortunate, and it's kind of. You know, there's no model that we have for, you know, gathering retail establishments, you know, workplaces, whatever, around something other than a public transportation system. But when we've come to distrust the populations riding these systems, you can kind of see how that's happened. And, you know, people don't feel safe on it. And that seems to be something they can't get a handle on at all. So I think any place that's, you know, near a transportation hub is going to suffer in some ways. People would rather, you know, ride a scooter or a bike there and take the L, the subway. So.
Well, you know, it's a...
Or your car, your old car with doors that...
Yeah.
Well, you know what's interesting is my brother still takes the Rock Island. You know, Rock Island has an offshoot that runs right through Beverly. It's like the local. So everybody in Beverly pretty much takes the Rock Island, and you're really 30 minutes to downtown on a beautiful train. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. It's way better than getting on the Dan Ryan. They also has a main line that goes out to Joliet. It's also a really nice thing. It just goes faster, and it just spins around that whole area. Well, for years and years, almost all the trains that had any people on them were the ones that were coming from Beverly. Not that there weren't people from Tinaline or places there were, but just about, especially when the exchanges were here, what would you say? Some of those trains are 80% of the people on the train worked at the exchanges. A lot of trade checkers, back office people, all those kinds of things. They're all were from the south side and piled down here on the train. I don't know if people on the north side too. But the Rock Island just added two more trains. And I said to my bro, I go, damn, are these new trains good for you? And he goes, what new trains? Well, I looked at the schedule. The new trains are all now on the main line, not on the Beverly line. So the trains that are picking up ridership are from Crestwood, Midlothian, Tinley, Joliet. They're not from the Beverly area like it used to be. That I'm sure a lot of that has to do with the exchanges being toast. Well, they're not, in their mind, they're not toast, but I mean, in terms of, instead of 30,000 people here, there's 2,000, but it's pretty much toast. That's amazing, isn't it? I mean, we talk about a shift of demographics.
Well, I'll say. I used to ride the Beverly branch, you know, get out and off at 95th Street. Often coming home, you know, from downtown in the afternoon, I stood.
Oh, yeah. Standing in the vestibule.
Yeah.
Well, that's now it's the people going to like Tinley and so forth. It's weird.
And they have grand stations. I mean, like in Tinley and New Lenox.
Yeah.
You know, the metro stations there are I mean, I never thought I'd see anything so nice, really.
Yeah, they're spectacular. Coffee, donut shops, and the whole thing in the morning. So what is going on? Your clients, and you always have some now. Well, I won't say an unusual case, and virtually all their clients are referrals from other clients because you've been doing this a while and you do a good job. So you got people that are always calling you. What do you see the struggles? I mean, Nancy was saying that young people are having trouble piling into this market. What are you seeing? I mean, is changes in the last times you've been since you were on the show?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's still, I've been fairly busy, and the statistics have been out. But as I think before we got lost to say, people think that July and August are the busiest times in real estate, but that's not true. It used to be when kids were on summer vacation, mom and dad would move in the summer so they could be in the house for September school. But that's not the typical family thing anymore. People, for one thing, school starts for a lot of kids in August. You already have to be in. Some people have already practiced sports or practicing in July. But so the little bit of time that people have available from Memorial Day to maybe middle of August, they're out having fun, enjoying summer. So the last, I would say for at least 5, 6, 7 years, July and August tend to be quiet, slow. People are out trying to enjoy themselves. And they'll be busy. January to June is usually the busiest time. July and August will be kind of quiet. It'll pick up after Labor Day. Run around till around Thanksgiving. If the weather's still not bad, we'll be busy for Christmas. Depends on the rates, but real estate used to be a seasonal business, and nowadays it's pretty much a year-round business. I noticed some of the closings slow down in the last month or so. I think it's just kind of reflecting. People are trying to time these interest rates, and it's been so volatile. They're hoping they're going to drop under 5, so I think some people might be waiting a little. But people who need to live somewhere are just going to plow ahead and go ahead.
I don't see the interest rates going down much, do you? I might see the short term might, but I don't see the long term with the inflation the way it is.
Well, I think you'll get back to the 5s. I think you'll get back around 5.75, in the mid 5s. I think you'll see that.
Well, that I can see. I'd see. It's not going to three again, is it? You don't think?
Oh, that was a once in a lifetime aberration. You're never going to see that again. You're going to be, you know, if you see somewhere around 5%, you better just go buy a house. I don't see that happening. That was just an artificial type of thing, I believe, anyway. And it was anybody who didn't take their chance to buy something at 3 and 4 and even 5% when they had the chance. You're not going to get that chance again at 3 again. I don't think so.
Is anybody doing adjustables? Are those around?
Yeah, a lot of people are doing adjustables. You're getting in 1 or 2% later. That'd be a good one for Nancy to talk about, because people are willing to roll the dice on that, because you can get a short-term adjustable. You can get one for a year, 3 year, 5 year, whatever, and see how it goes. You know, so it's an option for you to get your foot in the door at a lower interest rate, or you could buy down your interest rate. Literally, you could offer, I will pay what, a point or 2 points, whatever it costs to reduce your rate by half a point or a point. You could ask your mortgage broker that, especially if it's Nancy. Or you could ask for, though it's not a popular house, it won't work, but we used to ask the seller to pay down a point, some mortgage points. But the buyers can certainly do that now. And they can go for an adjustable. They can buy the rate down. So there's a lot of ways that you can approach things. You could buy a rate down just for a certain amount of years. You could buy it. It's something that you have to talk to a really good mortgage broker to help you navigate that market and, you know, maybe get people to get their foot in the door.
We have one of my good clients sent in an email saying that, we talked the other day about where the teams are staying, and I mentioned something about maybe staying at some of the universities. And he goes, FYI, Qatar and Austria World Cup teams are staying in Santa Barbara. They're staying at the two best and very high hotels here, not college dormers by any means. There you go. Hey, I did send this thing out to myself on Friday as I was doing some work. The number here for homeowners tapped $47 billion in equity of their houses in quarter one of 2026. What do you guys? That's I think that's a record for first quarter. What do you make of that? I mean, is that inflation?
Housing was up again this spring. Each month, I believe, except for maybe one, prices have ticked up. So I mean, that's perfectly feasible. But you know what I think that people realize that, say that, but they don't realize that I would say for most people, the house is their investment. For a lot of people who have not participated or can't or don't know how in the stock market, their house is their life. It is their savings account. It is their resource at old age. A lot of people, what used to do is they'd buy their house, raise their kids, and then sell it and downsize and get a condo or something and save the proceeds to, you know, live out or whatever. So this is good for a lot of people who could not participate in the stock market. They actually will have something to hang on to.
Home equity lines of credit and loans accounted for 54% of the total. The remainder came from cash out mortgage refinancing. You know, I don't know, you guys see any danger in that? Cash out mortgage financing, is that what is that?
Well, I mean, that's something I think people I know, even my family, have planned, like how to handle their children's education debt by using the house as an ATM. So,
nobody should do.
Yeah, but it's kind of like if they've got all this equity and, you know, at some point they're going to sell, and what they'll buy then is nothing like the house they've had. They don't want another house like that because it's too much. So they'll settle for something much more modest and, you know, maybe still be able to pay cash for it. So
that's true.
I wonder.
Well, 2007 wasn't that long ago. What makes everybody think it's going to stay up here forever?
It's very different. It's very different.
All right, well.
It's like giving loans for 120%, 20% back in cash at the closing table.
All right, well, so when a lot of people are are pulling money out to like remodeling the new kitchens and all that stuff, right? And to, I guess, pay for education, maybe to buy a car. I mean, it's probably for all the kind of reasons in the world, right?
Oh, I think so. Chad, I think that, you know, you're right, people. If you need money and your house is there and your kids need help, you know, parents are going to help their kids. You're right.
Audrey, what do you see happening with the appraisers? I mean, that was something I remember back in 2007 where the appraisers just seemed to throw caution to the winds and they weren't even, you know, they weren't doing appraisals as such, but they just knew that they had gone up in value and they'd write an appraisal that had almost no relation to reality and probably contributed to the hysteria. But is the appraisal industry changed at all in your experience?
I think the appraisal industry does need an overhaul. I don't think that it's the only cog in the wheel in real estate, in my opinion, where one person holds sway over everything.
Yeah.
So, I'm, you know, of course, you don't want to complicate it too much because we'll never get a closing. You know how that could be when you ask too many opinions. But I have only had one appraisal for the last couple of years that didn't come true. And I think it was more because the appraiser didn't know what he was doing, but that's just my opinion on that one. And here's the thing, what is helping this push this along is that some of these places that are going for cash and people don't care, they will waive the appraisal and waive the inspection. So now you've got a sale at what people might think is high, but it's done. You know, that's going to show up as a recorded sale.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's comparable now for everybody else.
So you've got a new floor.
Well, yeah, but if somebody comes in with cash, I mean, this is the problem that happened in 2008. I mean, if you ended up, if the houses are all, say, 400, and somebody wants to pay cash and doesn't care and he pays 450, it doesn't mean all the rest of the people can afford 450.
Well, that's not a problem for the valuation. That's a problem for people. It's two different things.
Yeah, well, it's... Except at some point, people have to be able to buy the stuff. But anyway, so give a shameless plug. How does somebody find you?
Well, if you want to give me a call, it's 708-846-6494. You could call or text me. Or my new email is audrey@audreyjohnsonrealestate.com.
One of these weeks, you're going to have to give us a story about the Realtor.com people. It's a
That whole
thing's blowing up. It's kind of blowing up. There's a lot of competitors in there, aren't there?
No. Well, I think the real estate industry needs a shakeup, that's for sure. Realtor.com is a nonprofit company that promotes itself as benefiting the realtors, but it's been sold off from the realtors who used to control it years ago, and now it's just a private company run by moving.
How many days, Jan, do we talk about defined profit today? When somebody says nonprofit, it means not for me, just for them.
Yeah, so that's a whole story.
We have no profit. Hey, Joe, how much
not
you
in my pocket.
How much you make it? I'm making $1 million a year. It sounds like profit to me. Whatever. Anyway, thank you, John. Thank you. Nice job, Matt. Jimmy, thank you. SP Futures up 5. NASDAQ Futures up 143. A lot of that is Micron up $62. Marvell up $4. The same one. Just kind of keep going. Intel up $4.58. Those are the ones. MicroStrategy up $3.50 with Bitcoin up a little bit. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
Do you eat a lot of paint chips when you were a kid?